Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you today in digest format, World Radio Magazine, the online version in digest format, for the month of November 2010. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The editor is Richard Fisher. His amateur call is KI6SN. This recording is a production of the Courage Andy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. The website www.handyham.org. Well, let's take a look at what's really new in the amateur radio news front. Radio amateurs provide vital support in Pakistan. The Pakistan Amateur Radio Society reports that a cross-band emergency repeater was set up to provide the first communications of its type in the Swat Valley, a site of devastating floods. The repeater was linked to the rest of the country through a chain of 2-meter repeaters. According to Pakistan Amateur Radio Society, emergency communications organizer Asad Marwat, his call AP2AUM, the linking of so many repeaters will cause a squelch-tail delay. However, given the circumstances and lack of proper equipment, the radio amateur says it will be more than acceptable. That was according to a report on Amateur Radio Newsline. A convoy of radio amateurs was relocating a repeater already installed at Changle to the Malakand Heights so it could be linked into the emergency communication system. A team of radio amateurs was transporting a VHF base station with a high-gain antenna via helicopter. AP2AUM said, "With the availability of a 12-volt car battery, all should be up and running shortly," was the comment. On the heels of the massive flooding, the Pakistan Amateur Radio Society continues to work in partnership with Islamabad Jeep Club members and the Pakistan Academy of Family Physicians to provide support for those affected. Some 30 radio amateurs are involved in providing emergency communications in response to the disaster that so far has affected an estimated 20 million people and claimed 1,500 lives. We thank Amateur Newsline and the Pakistani Radio Organization for that vital uplink information. Expedition activity heats up in November and the year 2010. Members of the Caracas Venezuela DX group will be active as YW5LF from the Los Frailes Islands from November 18 to 22 QSL. This operation via Delta Mike 4 Tango India, that's DM4TI. If you'd like to get an SWL card or an amateur card in return acknowledging the two-way contact. Meanwhile, G0OPA will be active as 8 Papa 9 Lima Juliet from Hull Town in St. James Parish on Barbados through November 8. His operation will be on all of the high-frequency bands according to an ARN Amateur Newsline report. If you make contact, please QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. The Ohio Penn DX newsletter reports VK2IR, Victor Kilo 2 India Romeo, with the help of 3D2AA, will be heading up a team of 10 operators to activate Rotuma, I assume that's an island, in July 2011. VK2IR says that further details of this operation will be forthcoming as the plans progress. This info provided by Amateur Newsline and other DX sources. Hamfest India is set this month in Palaki. The 19th annual Hamfest India will be held November 13 and 14 in Palaki, Tamil Nadu, in India, at the Palak APA Educational Institute. More information and the complete details are available at the Hamfest India 2010 website. is a little bit of news being made by the Quarter Century Wireless Association. Wanted: QCWA member stories of youth mentoring and education. Dave Hayes, Victor Echo 3, Juliet X-Ray, Quarter Century Wireless Association columnist for World Radio Online, told Amateur Radio Newsline that he is, quoting, looking for input from members regarding their involvement in youth-oriented projects such as ham radio youth mentoring and education. To that end, Dave says that he would like to ask those chapters who have experience in this to relate that to them. VE3JX cites, among other activities, Chapter 151 in Alberta, Canada, whose members have gone to various schools and conducted live contacts with the astronaut and cosmonaut hams on board the International Space Station. He also says if other members or chapters have participated in the youth mentoring program sponsored jointly by the QCWA and Amateur Radio Newsline. If you are a QCWA member and have experience with any aspect of ham radio youth mentoring, please send your story along with any related photos to Hayes. His email is his call sign, ve3jx@arrl.net. Or if you're more comfortable sending it into Canadian internet, it's ve3jx@rac.ca. We keep talking about that important aspect of amateur radio hobbying and MCOM, emergency communication support. Another piece here says, amateurs provide MCOM support for Colorado wildfire. The American Radio Relay League reports hams are providing communications at a massive wildfire that broke out in September just northwest of Boulder, Colorado. Quoting, amateur radio operators are located at the Red Cross shelter set up at the University of Colorado Event Center and also at the Boulder County Emergency Operations Center, a report on ARN said. They provided voice and ATV communications between forward fire units, the incident command post, and the Emergency Operations Center. Hams are also providing voice and packet communications for the Red Cross. We'll finish up on Newsline with an interesting piece about the parent company of World Radio, CQ. Amateur Radio launches easier to navigate website. CQ Amateur Radio Magazine, www.cq-amateur-radio.com, has launched a new and easy to navigate website, company officials said. The updated cyberspace home for the magazine features a clean look and a streamlined user interface, which, according to editor Rich Mawson, W2VU, is a major step forward. A report on Amateur Radio Newsline said, the main benefit of our new website is ease of navigation, Mawson told ARN in September. We've had great things on there for years, but they have been added piecemeal and they have built up into a kind of a patchwork, and it's been hard to find things. Now we've reorganized things and it's all easy to find, with much of it easy to get to with just one or two clicks. The new site features links to special information for new and prospective hams, as well as Hamfest and special event listings. We also have a couple of new features on the website, such as the current issue highlights right on the front page, links to our other magazines, and a direct link to our Facebook page, W2VU said. The updating of the CQ website completes a company-wide website upgrade for all four magazines published by CQ Communications, Inc., which include Popular Communications, CQ VHF, and World Radio Online magazines. We thank ARN and, of course, CQ Magazine for that updated information. Well, it's time to take a look at the editor's log. Of course, the editor is Richard Fisher, KI6SN. The editor titles it, "A Stream of Consciousness Leads Right to the Dumpster." That's an interesting lead-in, huh? World Radio Online readers who have been unable to take part in one of our monthly WRO Live online chat sessions occasionally drop an email asking what goes on there. Of course, anyone can catch an encore of the entire internet session by visiting the World Radio Online blog. which is at www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com, and pressing replay. One way to describe the live event, though, is a stream of consciousness. At the appointed hour, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on a designated Sunday, we open the chat window and participants begin checking in. Comments fly fast and furious. We keep it very informal and friendly, a conversation among friends. Invariably, someone mentions an on-air activity, opposes a technical question, and we're off and running. Our chat on September 12th was a fine example. As you'll see, it ultimately led right to the dumpster. From Oakland Park, Kansas, Steve Everly called KC0VYS, signed in early, and soon excused himself, quoting here, "Sorry, gotta go and try to contact ISS, that's the International Space Station, which will be over Kansas City in about 7 minutes. We'll log back in after," close quote. Gil Woodside called WA1LAD of West Warwick, Rhode Island, quickly posted, "Good luck with the ISS, Steve. I had a QSO with them back in July. It was awesome." Ladd went on to say he worked the ISS mobile while driving home from work one evening. Colonel Doug Wheelock does a lot of operating from the ISS. The key is to listen first. "I was thrilled to finally make the QSO," that's the two-way voice contact. "I had a few voice and digital QSOs with the Russian space station Mir before they deorbited it." KC0VYS subsequently returned, quoting again, "Back from trying to contact ISS here in Kansas City. They are sleeping now, so no voice. But heard lots of packet traffic, but no decoder right now." Fascinating detail for those of us who have never worked the International Space Station. And our editor, Richard Fisher, goes on a significantly longer period of time with a lot of other personal commentary from other hams who have gathered on the system, on the network, and the Internet to exchange thoughts and ideas. If you're really interested, it's www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. And you can look for the exact date of the next one in the CQ Magazine website page. We have a short but interesting piece here on vintage radio gear on Battleship North Carolina, used to commemorate the end of Pacific War. This piece was put together by World Radio Online staff and news services. Using original equipment aboard the Battleship North Carolina, operators of the Azalea Coast Amateur Radio Club made voice and Morse code contact with the battleship Missouri, docked in Pearl Harbor on September 2, commemorating the 65th anniversary of the end of World War II in the Pacific. The operators of the Azalea Coast Amateur Radio Club have for several years maintained the old radio equipment on the North Carolina, docked in Wilmington, North Carolina. The Battleship Missouri, and their website is www.ussmissouri.com, was where the treaty was signed ending the war in the Pacific, and the flagship of Admiral William Bull Halsey, a club release notes. The contact on September 2 was facing some difficulty due to the approach of Hurricane Errol. However, at about 8:30 p.m., conditions improved and Morse code contact was made, according to a club spokesman, which was the usual mode of communications at sea during World War II. With constant upkeep and maintenance by ACARC members, the equipment on board the North Carolina performed as if it were new. The members who maintain the equipment are Jack Jacobs, WD4OIN, Norman Clemons, KI4SY, and Bill Usher, AG4PA. Morse code operators included ACARC President Charlie Vaughan, K4UWH, and Alan Palin, KX2H. Also present were Club Treasurer Hutch Hutchinson, NK0S, and Public Information Officer Glenn Cox, KE4BMY. For more information, you can go to the North Carolina Battleship Memorial and Museum website at www.battleshipnc, that's one piece word, battleshipnc.com/page1.php. And one further note, if you're interested and able to help in maintaining the Battleship North Carolina radio equipment, contact Glenn Cox. The email there is lowercase, his call sign first, KE4BMY at hotmail.com. I suppose, folks, those of you who listen on somewhat of a regular basis to this part of Leisure Pursuits, the hobby of amateur radio, you've already noticed, sometimes painfully, because you don't understand what it represents, a lot of acronyms like DX, which is actually Worldwide Contact Out of Your Own Continental Limits State or whatever, and all kinds of other things. QSO, QSO, for instance, that's a two-way contact confirmation via those postcards and things that amateur radio operators send back and forth through the mails, and now, of course, through the Internet. We have a piece here in the DX world category, Out of the Shadows. Remember that old show? Who knows what the shadow? No, that's not what it says here. Out of the Shadows, an introduction to gray line propagation. And that's not the bus line in Boston, folks. Its author is Kelly Jones, and Zero VD. Now that fall is upon us and cooler temps are here, there is a good chance you'll have a little more free time to spend in front of the radio. And with all of your newfound radio time, you now have extra time, right? Perhaps you'll have more opportunity to chase those new and rare ones. After spending the past few years in the sunspot doldrum, it is certainly nice to have the bands in a little better shape when you actually do sit down and tune around. That said, the bands are far from the days of 10 meters being open around the clock. Typically, by mid-evening, the higher bands have closed for the night. However, all is not lost. There is another phenomenon similar to the solar cycle that happens every day, actually twice a day. It's called the gray line, G-R-A-Y, gray line. For many years, most of my operating time was spent on the higher bands, that's 10, 15, 20 meters. This was partially due to the fact that antennas for these bands are reasonably small and can easily be something as simple as a wire. Another reason was that I always seemed to have something going on in the evenings, and I'm by no means an early riser. So for many years, the higher bands suited my DX needs. However, there came a time when I yearned for a bigger challenge, enters the world of great line DXing. Early in my DXing career, I had heard of guys working DX during the twilight hours on 40 and 80 meters, but had never really experienced it myself. However, once I decided to finish a 5-band DXCC, I knew I had to learn more about this phenomenon. Now, just a note, folks, 5-band DXCC actually represents this particular operator having worked 100 stations in all of the major DX categories that are available to amateur radio operators. It's like a contest, but you sort of play the time yourself to get the award. If you have spent any time at all on the low bands, you know that the gray line is the key to working DX on these bands. But what is the gray line and how does it affect propagation? In simple terms, the gray line is a band around the Earth that separates daylight from darkness. High-frequency propagation along this band is very efficient. One major reason for this is that the D layer, which absorbs high-frequency signals, disappears rapidly on the sunset side of the gray line, and it has not yet built upon the sunrise side. As you know, the ionosphere surrounds the Earth and is responsible for allowing us to make contact with stations hundreds or even thousands of miles away. It is comprised of several layers, each having a distinct effect on how our radio signal travels and how it propagates during the sunrise and sunset hours. During the day, Solar radiation collides with the molecules in the ionosphere, knocking off electrons. This is called ionization. They are called free electrons because they are not attached to an atom or molecule. All of these free electrons cause the density of the ionosphere to increase. The denser the ionosphere, the higher the frequency that is reflected back to Earth. This is often called the maximum usable frequency, or the acronym MUF. At sundown, solar radiation no longer strikes the ionosphere directly above our heads, and the ionization stops. This means there is no solar radiation to form free electrons. In fact, without solar radiation, the free electrons tend to recombine with their host molecules. Recombination. As it begins to get dark, recombination causes the electron density to go down, forcing the maximum usable frequency, MUF, to go down as well. This is why the higher bands tend to go silent after the sun sets. The D layer of the ionosphere is the closest to the Earth's surface and is the first layer where ionization stops. This is because sunlight is no longer reaching this layer. Remember, the sun has to set on the horizon, but it is still illuminating and ionizing the ionosphere far above our heads. As the D layer goes into recombination, the electron density goes down, as does the absorption. During the twilight hours, or the gray line, as it's often called, the D layer suddenly causes little absorption of signals passing through it, while the E and F layers are still being ionized by sunlight. This makes for about 45 to 60 minutes of very interesting propagation. There is almost no signal attenuation, but the MUF is still very high, so very long-distance communications are possible. The author continues with some wonderful commentary and educational aspects to show us, tell us what this is all about. But in summary, if you have never tried working gray line propagation, I hope I've created enough curiosity for you to give it a try. I can vividly remember working one of my first gray line contacts. It was my first YB, Yankee Bravo, on 40 meters. And to top it off, it was long path. Just prior to my sunset, just after his sunrise. I nearly fell out of the chair when he called my call. And the contact was made on that little ground-mounted multi-band vertical I mentioned a while ago. It just goes to show you, you don't need large antenna arrays to work some great DX during the gray line hours. Our thanks go back to Kelly Jones, November 0, Victor Delta, for his commentary, Out of the Shadows, an introduction to gray line propagation. As I come to the next piece, it's titled Looking West, VHF, FM, and Repeaters. It's by author Bill Pasternak, called WA6ITF. Bill is a familiar person here on the radio and on the internet. He's for many, many years been famous for his news line. He's talking about this narrowing of the separation between repeaters in Florida, the VHF and the UHF repeaters, and the commentary goes on for quite a while, and it gets to be very technical, folks. It begins on page 18 and concludes on page 22. A lot of detail. That's about all I'm going to say about it, because you have to be interested in what this is all about, not just in general, but specifically in Florida, if it's going to mean anything to you. But I want to thank Bill Pasternak for another great effort for the amateur radio community, and this article is The Road Narrowing for VHF and UHF Repeaters in Florida. I think that's also happening in other states throughout the United States, and amateur radio operators know what the battle is. But if you're interested, you can have a friend of yours to help you read it, or you can listen to someone else repeat it for you, and I hope you enjoy Bill Pasternak's efforts. Another interesting aspect of amateur radio, and sometimes we men tend to overlook the very significant contribution of YLs, young ladies. That's what they're called in ham radio. Here's an article by Cheryl Muir. Her call is N0WBV, November 0, Whiskey Bravo Victor. It's titled Spending Our Time Wisely on the Bands and Around the Globe. It's interesting how the time of year can set the table for how radio amateurs channel their energy. For example, if you need to improve your station, summer is a great time to work on antennas. If you need to work on operating skills, winter is perfect. As the days shorten and the weather continues to cool, bands' conditions improve, at least here in Colorado. Time to get more serious about being active on the air. Although winter is officially still more than a month away, December 21st, the waning months of the calendar year are a great time for radio in multiple ways. Think about it. In addition to improving band conditions, you've been hearing about that in this reading all half hour now, the kids are back in school. Oh, yeah. So no need to feel guilty about talking on the air. Not to mention all the great contests to run and during the last part of the year. Do you have plans to be active with the holidays approaching? Are you planning to operate on New Year's Eve for Straight Key Night? There are so many ways to stay active. Why else are traveling all over the world? Mia Mishi, a JR3MVF, writes that she recently took a trip to attend the second Shanghai Ham Radio Festival and had a very good eyeball cuso with old friends. Her first trip to the People's Republic of China was in 1983 to its BY4 and BY5 call areas. It has been about 10 years since I visited there last, she said. But many friends welcomed me and had a wonderful time with them. By now, the YLs from Greenland will be back as well. The first YL Greenland de-expedition was held in September, and I should have more details for the next column. Hope many of you got to work them. Now, about the International YL Meet in 2010. There are multiple YL gatherings around the world, and you can usually find at least one major event each year. Some are just DX trips, but others are get-togethers for YLs to catch up with eyeball CUSOs. There are two large YL meetings held around the world. The Young Ladies Radio League, that's YLRL, holds its convention every 3 to 4 years to keep an anniversary schedule. It alternates with the International YL Meet, which is unaffiliated with any particular YL group. The YLRL conventions are usually held in the United States, as the bulk of members reside there, but members from all over the world attend. There are often 10 to 12 countries represented, and the next YLRL convention will be held in Boston in July 2011. So there you go, folks. You are listening to this off of the Massachusetts Radio Network and you Leisure Pursuits programming. Can catch it very conveniently if you're interested in more about the International YL meeting. It's in Boston next July. You better be there. This year included the International YL meeting in Munich in Germany, where YLs from all over the world enjoyed sightseeing and a trip to the famous German Hamfest in Friedrichshafen. And quite a few of them made comments back to the editor. Now, don't forget to send us news. If you are a YL, or you know a YL active and amateur radio, be sure to send information in for the YL column. I need to hear from readers to get all the latest happenings of the YLs. So whether you are participating in your first contact contest or the expedition, or have been active for years, send in your YL news. See you on the band. The author for the YL column is Cheryl Muir. It's C-H-E-R-Y-L, last name Muir, M-U-H-R. Cheryl's call is N0, Whiskey, Bravo, Victor. Well, as we make our way through this reading, we come to hamfests and special events. Hamfests are like conventions for amateur radio operators, like huge yard sales and special event presentations and so forth. Always a lot of fun. There's a list here of several of them. First one is Thunder Bay, Canada. You want to go places? Become a ham radio operator, folks. Thunder Base MCTS Center, that's the Canadian Coast Guard radio station, during November celebrates 100 years of radio service with the operation of Special Event Station CG3MUG. That's Charlie Golf 3, Mike Uniform Golf. Built by the Canadian Marconi Company in the fall of 1910, the new wireless station, MUG Port Arthur, was the first and only Canadian Great Lakes Marconi station ever built. In 1912, remember we're talking 100 years back here, folks. In 1912, following the success of MUG, the Canadian government built a chain of marine radio stations from Port Arthur down to Kingston, Ontario. In 1913, the Marconi station was rebuilt and assigned its current government call sign of VBA, that's Victor Bravo Alpha. The V denotes the Canadian station, the B is for the Great Lakes, and the A was given for its historic position as the first. There will be several options for amateur radio stations and SWL shortwave listeners to obtain a special 100th anniversary CG3MUG QSL card. A certificate may also be designed. As we get closer to the event and make the final preparations, we will update the CG3MUG listing on the QRZ.com website. As an aside, folks, the QRZ.com website is where anybody can go if they know a call sign to look up and find out where that person is in the world. That's, of course, some information on the person if they put their own biographical information into it. Very fascinating and unusual site. VHF and HF operation via CW, PSK, RTTY, single sideband, FM, VOIP, that's the CQ100, and perhaps other digital data modes on the amateur radio bands. The email address for this special event station is lowercase cg3mug at yahoo, that's Yahoo, dot C-A. State of Florida, South Florida Hamfest, November 6th. From 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Boca Raton Amateur Radio Association at the South County Civic Center at 16700 Jog Road, Delray Beach, Florida. All kinds of things going on there. If you're interested, check it out. State of Indiana, 38th Annual Fort Wayne Hamfest and Computer Expo, sponsored by the Allen County Amateur Radio Technology Society, will be held November 13th and 14th. At the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum at the corner of Indiana 930, that's Coliseum Boulevard, and Parnell Street. Open to the public 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday and from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday. Again, the date is November 13 and 14 at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. Going back to Canada, Ontario, Canada, the GULP, that's G-U-E-L-P-H, GULP, Amateur Radio Club, GULP, Ontario, Canada, Special Event Station, Victor Alpha 3, India Fox, that's V-A-3-I-F, at McRae House, the birthplace of Colonel John McRae, the author of the poem, In Flanders Fields. The station will operate from Saturday, November 6th, to Thursday, November 11th, Remembrance Day. The station is in honor of Remembrance and World Peace, and will be visited by numerous student groups, many of whom will be getting their first exposure to amateur radio. The station will be operating on all the bands, 10, 15, 20, 40, and 80, as well as IRLP. So look around, listen in, and have a good time with that situation in Ontario, Canada. State of Pennsylvania, WACOM, WACOM, 2010 Hamfest, Washington Amateur Communications, Sunday, November 7, Washington County Fairgrounds. That's at 2151 North Main Street, Washington, Pennsylvania. State of Florida. They keep popping up here. This is the second one on this page. They didn't get it together, did they? No. Maybe it's by time or date or something. Veterans Day Special Event Station, K4NYC, Kilo 4, November Yankee Charlie. To honor and thank all military personnel who served the United States military past and present. Recognition Day. They're on the air from November 11 through 13 on various frequencies, and Veterans Day is officially observed on November 11th. For K4NYC special event Veterans Day QSL cards, send a QSL and self-addressed stamp envelope to Ed Ramos, 11200 Northwest 39th Street, Coral Gables, Florida, 33065. Several months ago, the magazine, The World Radio Online, brought back the station appearance page, or pages. It has to do with highlighting some particular ham radio operator's operating space, where it is in a house or wherever, and they detail it. This one's rather interesting. Bring on the heat. Well, I guess that's a challenge, huh? Call N2GJ, November 2, Golf Juliet, Kingston, New Jersey. First, an editor's note. This month's station appearance features the operating position of Jerry Gerrans, that's G-E-R-R-Y, last name J-U-R-R-E-N-S, Jerry Gerrans, call N2GJ of Kingston, New Jersey. Even being relegated to a corner of the basement couldn't put a chill on his enjoyment of amateur radio. He's beside the furnace. Well, I gotta tell you, folks, if you had a picture of me right now, that's exactly where I'm sitting. Would you believe, and this isn't in the article I'm talking now, that I actually have to turn that big red switch in the wall off? Because if I'm operating or talking and trying to record this material for you, that thing really rumbles when it kicks in. Hi, hi. So anyway, meantime, are you proud of your station's neat appearance? Not really. Or does that clutter provide just the comfort level you need to most enjoy the hobby? I'd have to think about that too, I suppose. Send digital photographs of your station with details to worldradioonline@gmail.com, and we'll consider them for publication in station appearance in an upcoming edition of WRO. If there's a YouTube video to accompany the still pictures, let us know, and we'll set up a link. Now down to the actual gentleman. I share a corner of the basement with the oil furnace, says Jerry Gerrans from New Jersey's Somerset County. In winter, Heel headphones and a noise-canceling microphone are a must. My equipment includes an ICOM IC736 Pro 3, ICOM IC7000, Yaesu FT817, operating WSPR mostly on 30 meters, an NUE PSK modem, an Electcraft KX1, and a trusty Venture paddle. Remember, on CW, no one can hear you scream. And I might add here, they don't hear the rumble of the burner either. You can take my word for that, folks. Now it is close quarters. Jerry acknowledges it's a pretty small space for sure. The whole station is piled up on a small desk, but it works for me. I'm close to the cellar window, so getting the RF out of the basement is no big deal. I have nothing fancy in the antenna area, just a G5RV up in a swamp maple tree, the center about 40, 50 feet up. With the 100 watts or less, I've worked most of the world. I do have a work table behind me for projects, but sadly, it's become more of a place to pile up my QST magazines and the CQ mags as well. So how does one end up in a corner of the basement? Don't ask me that question. I would be afraid to tell you, folks. Not sure how it happened, Jerry said, but my XYL Connie and two ATJ got the laundry room, I got the furnace area, and our eldest son got the remainder of the basement for his plastic model workshop and collection. Seems like he got the best of the deal, doesn't it? Can you say Borg Collective? Jerry says he's always been into public service communications. I've been a net manager for an NTSCW net, the New Jersey Morning Net, for years, so HF, high frequency CW, would have to be his favorite mode. However, he says, I enjoy all facets of the hobby, PSK31 with my NUE PSK modem and so forth. What part of amateur radio does N2GJ find most interesting? I love it all. I've been doing it since high school in the 60s, and there isn't a facet of the hobby I don't enjoy. In the beginning, I was first licensed as a novice as a WN2VTT in 1966, passing my test at the now-defunct Princeton YMCA Radio Club. I got my general license shortly thereafter, traveling into New York City at what became the site of the World Trade Center, also known as Radio Row, to take the test at the FCC office there. My call was a WB2VTT then. A few years later, I upgraded to advanced in Philadelphia, again at the FCC. In 1975, I upgraded to extra at the FCC office in suburban Philly and applied for and got November 2 Golf Juliet. I thought it would be cool to have one of the new N call signs, as I'm also a private pilot and U.S. aircraft all have N designations as their call signs. In a roundabout way, unrequited interest in a girl provided Jerry's pathway to amateur radio. Oh, really? Larry Pirot, XWB2RZD, was a neighbor about my age, N2GJ recalled. He had a really cute sister, Jessica. I wanted to meet her, so I stopped by the house to see if she might go out with me sometime. She invited me in, and I heard Morse code coming from downstairs. I asked her, what's that noise? She said, rolling her eyes, oh, that's my stupid brother, probably talking to someone in England. She introduced me to him, and I ended up buying his entire ham station and getting my license. Oh, and I never did go out with her. Just the same, Jerry believes he's hooked forever on amateur radio. I'm a life member of the ARRL, AMPSET, 1010 International, and World Radio Online, was his parting comments. Well, we're marching past the 41st minute, folks, so let's go to the Quarter Century Wireless Association commentary by Dave Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S. Dave's a Canadian operator. His call is Victor Echo 3, Juliet X-ray, V-E-3-J-X. It's titled Justly Deserved. Recognition can pay great dividends. Begins on page 35 of World Radio Online for November 2010. I will always fondly remember the evening of May 6, 2010. It was the night of the monthly meeting of our local Algoma Amateur Radio Club. In conversation at the April meeting, AARC President Bob Rayner, VE3RQR, asked if I was going to be at the May meeting. He informed me that he had a certificate of appreciation for me in connection with the three-year stint I had completed as the club's newsletter editor. So I knew about this presentation beforehand. At May's meeting, after the necessary business of the club was dealt with, Bob presented a framed certificate to me. It was a moment of pleasure and satisfaction as I had put my heart and soul into the composition of our monthly RAG newsletter. I always had the inner satisfaction of doing a good job with the Algoma Amateur, our club's newsletter. But to have tangible evidence that our readers also enjoyed it was the icing on the cake. However, the evening was just beginning. No sooner had I sat down from this presentation when the chairman of the Dave Allison Award Committee, Dave Pitcher, VE3DPT, took the floor to announce Algoma's Amateur of the Year, the recipient of the Dave Allison Award. Me! He mentioned my setting a new bar in producing the newsletter and my involvement in EC and DEC with Harris. It took at least a couple of weeks to wipe the permanent smile off my face. Such recognition is greatly appreciated by all those who receive it. And there is a nice picture of our columnist Dave Hayes, Victor Echo 3 Juliet X-Ray, with the AARC's Dave Allison Award for 2010. Recognition is also a big part of QCWA, Quarter Century Wireless Association. Just being accepted as a member is recognition of the fact that the applicant has been involved with amateur radio for 25 years or more. It is a milestone in that person's life to be part of the Quarter Century Wireless Association. It is a noteworthy accomplishment in a short attention span world where many flit from hobby to hobby, quickly losing interest with each in turn. Therefore, QCWA members are rightly proud of their QCWA membership as a sign of their long-term interest in our majestic hobby. However, it doesn't stop there. 25 years is but one milestone in a member's life. There are specific longevity certificates given to each member reaching 50 years or more in amateur radio, issued in 5-year increments. Chapter reports in a QCWA journal usually indicate those who have been presented with 50 through 80 or more years, believe it or not, of seniority in this avocation. Why are such milestones celebrated? And does this mean we consider those so honored QCWA members as better than anyone else? No. It is really the same idea as wedding anniversaries. It is an accomplishment, even more so these days, to be married more than just a handful of years. It is with good reason we celebrate the longevity of a couple's mutual love and regard, especially when the years mount up to 25, 40, and even a half century or more. Does that make such couples better than those around them that have not been so fortunate? No. Notwithstanding, it is something to be celebrated and honored in both the cases of marriage and seniority in our hobby. In QCWA, we do just that. We recognize our longtime fellow amateur radio aficionados. Besides longevity accomplishments, QCWA also marks outstanding achievement and performance by our members. We mentioned about three presentations made to certain members who had made significant contributions to amateur radio and QCWA. The first of these was made to Croft Taylor, VE3CT, longtime member, past director, and past president of QCWA. Croft was awarded QCWA's most prestigious honor, the Hall of Fame Award. It is given only to those who have already been honored nationally or internationally. In Canada, the highest honor bestowed on an amateur is becoming a member of the Canadian Amateur Radio Hall of Fame. Croft is the latest QCWA member to be inducted. Five others have been honored in the past. This recognition, together with his timeless service to QCWA, made Croft the logical choice for this award. To say that Croft was surprised and pleased would be an understatement. I believe it is one of the happiest moments of his life. Congratulations again, Croft. There are several other special awards that QCWA hands out to worthy recipients. Another Canadian amateur, George Roach, VE3BNO, has received the 2010 Roll of Honor Award. The requirements for this are very similar to the Hall of Fame Award, except that national or international recognition of the individual's achievements is not necessary. George has been involved with amateur satellites, voice repeaters since 1964, and fast scan ATV repeaters. He's a former QCWA director. For many years, he was convention manager, offering guidance to any chapter organizing the national convention. Also, he continues to be operating activities manager, responsible for various operating events, and also net manager for the QCWACW and single sideband international nets. A busy man. Congratulations, George. The John DeBlacy Award is QCWA-specific. It recognizes any QCWA member who has, over a long period of time, made an outstanding contribution to the honor and preservation of our association. This year's recipient is Blanche Randles, W4GXZ. Blanche started the QCWA taping program in 1987, where specific sections of the QCWA Journal are taped for the benefit of our sight-impaired members. She was a QCWA tape coordinator from 87 to 2008. She's also a QCWA director from 2004 to 2008. QCWA's Distinguished Service Award is used in recognition of outstanding service to QCWA. Our president, Bob Roski, and Zero UF received this award back in 2007 for his many years of faithfully maintaining the QCWA website. Other meritorious awards that QCWA hands out are the Member of the Year Award and the Presidential Award. The former is given to a QCWA member who has made the greatest contribution to QCWA or amateur radio during the preceding year. This went to Vic Culver, called W4VIC, for his work associated with the taping program and the 2008 QCWA Virginia Beach Convention and his participation in QCWA's standing committees. Good job, Vic. There is even an award that individual chapters can request to recognize the outstanding service of a chapter member, the Meritorious Award Certificate. One of these can be sent to each chapter annually upon request, making for an honor that is endorsed by QCWA National. Incidentally, our beloved past QCWA columnist Alan Pickering, KJ9N, has earned multiple QCWA awards over the years. Among them are the Presidential Award, John DeBlasey Award, the Roll of Honor Award, and so forth. This last award specifically acknowledges Alan's many years in writing this column from the year 2001 through 2009, plus his service as a QCWA National Director and Secretary, and as a past president of QCWA Sun City Center Chapter 195. Congratulations, Alan, and of course to all of the recipients of these fine awards for the Quarter Century Wireless Association. There are also a lot of operating awards. QCWA has various operating awards available for members. The 60th anniversary of the formation of our organization was marked in the year 2007. A special award, the 6060 Award, was created, quoting, for making 60 two-way contacts with 60 different CQWA members between May 17, 2007 and June 30, 2008. It was a nice way to celebrate that milestone. The Quarter Century Wireless Association website shows that 39 members were able to qualify for this award. The other operating awards have proven even more of a challenge. One is the Worked 50 States Award. It is issued to a QCWA member who has contacted members in each state of the union. Imagine the difficulty level in that one. Other ones include Worked 60 Chapters Award, Worked 100 Members Award, and Worked 500 Members Award. These also indicate quite an accomplishment on the part of each recipient. While all QCWA awards have not been covered here, suffice it to say, QCWA does honor its members. The Quarter Century Wireless Association and recognition, they go hand in hand. In QCWA, everyone is recognized for their longevity in the hobby, their meritorious service to amateur radio, and their operating skills. Why not join us and be recognized as a senior member of the greatest avocation in the world? And here's a reminder, QCWA Life membership dues are increasing by 33% in the new years. Get yours now and save. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this brings us to the conclusion of the reading of World Radio Magazine Online Edition for November 2010. World Radio is a publication of CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may reach at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. We have a great website, updated all the time, www.handyham.org. Your reader, my name is Bob Seda. My amateur radio call is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, your geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. We're right down here, about 50 miles south of Boston, on beautiful Buzzards Bay, a gateway to Cape Cod and the islands. 73s. Have a great Thanksgiving and holiday season. Bye-bye.